Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today's Thursday, March 13th, 2014. My name is Sally Bassus. Thank you for tuning in to our weekly edition of Smart Talk 2014 Elections, Know Your Candidates with Sherry Smart and Neil Rice. I got a couple of quick updates before we get going because we do have a special guest tonight. Wanted to let everybody know, in case you did not see my email, I went to Mr. Rand Paul's website, his Senate website, excuse me, and sent him a very nice email asking him, was his loyalty to the GOP stronger than his loyalty to the Tea Party? We all know he was elected by the Tea Party, and he's a Tea Party guy. At the same time, he's endorsing Mitch McConnell, a GOP establishment person, who has threatened to crush the Tea Party. That's what the GOP is all about. So I put that question out there to Rand Paul. So I'm going to see if he says anything. And I truly think it will be telling right now, after Mitch McConnell went out there and trashed the Tea Party and said the GOP is going to crush the Tea Party, if Rand Paul still endorses him and doesn't change it over to the other guy, Matt Bevin, or just not endorse anybody, then I think that's just telling that he'll sell his principles very easily. He talks a good talk when he's talking about the Constitution and all these things, and we all like the fact that he's suing the president for the NSA. But if he keeps surrendering his own principles for this other stuff, for the GOP establishment, I think we should all be very concerned. So that was one thing. The other thing, which we're going to talk more about in the second half of the show, Florida residents, especially, be aware. You got to go out there. There's two bills, Senate Bill 230 and House Bill 311, where they are trying to change the name of the Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority, change it to the Central Florida Expressway Authority or something, and give them massive control over all of Central Florida. And those of you who know anything about transportation in Central Florida know the Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority is nothing but a culture of corruption that's under investigation right now. So why would we want to do this? It all comes down to regionalism, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in the second half. But you've got to go out there, contact every one of these elected whatevers in Tallahassee, and tell them no to more corruption. The last thing we need to do is expand the corruption of the Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority, which, as I say, is under investigation right now as we speak. And then the last thing, I make sure I say this at the beginning of every show, Florida residents, again, vote no on Amendment 1. We'll talk about it in the second half if you don't know, but you better find out. Always be suspicious when they put an amendment on the ballot on a midterm election or an off election. Whenever they do that, it's because they want to slip it by when most people aren't voting, and there's only one reason they do that, because they know it's bad for us. So on that note, I am going to hand this over. Let's see. Sherry, are you out there?
Yes, I am.
Welcome.
Hey, Sherry.
And,
hey, Neil. Hey, Roger. Are you on?
I am, Sherry.
Hey, This is Sherry Smart with Smart Talk and Neil Rice, co-host. And our guest this evening is Roger Dowdell. He is heading up the Common Law Grand Jury in Manatee County in Florida. And he's going to be talking to us tonight about the Common Law Grand Jury, how we can get involved, and how we can begin the process in this state and turn things around, hopefully not just in Florida, but be a guiding light for the rest of the nation. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Thank you, Sherry. Thanks for having me.
Oh, very welcome. Do you want to tell people a little bit about what this is?
Sure. It's the best summary statement that I've seen is that the Common Law Grand Jury is the primary tool our founders gave us to keep our government centered on our Constitution. And it actually historically comes to us from the Magna Carta. And throughout the hundreds of years since the Magna Carta, it's evolved a bit. But at the time the country was founded, we had every county in the 13 colonies had their common law grand jury.
And how did we get away from it, Roger? Do you know historically what happened? How did we go away from that to what we currently are doing?
Sure. Well, let me explain one point before I answer that. The Kamala grand jury has three primary functions. Function number one is to protect the common people from unjust charges from those in power, whether they're kings or presidents or senators or whatever it is. Number two, using evidence that is donated to it by we the people and evidence that is generated on their own investigations, make sure that the right bad actors for the criminal activity that's going on are standing trial. And number three, and possibly most important in today's circumstance, is the common law grand jury has both the right and the authority to reach into any part of government, elected or unelected, to root out corruption. And corruption includes, by definition, anything repugnant to our Constitution. So as you might expect, this means basically that a panel of 25 citizens is overlooking every piece of the government operation, whether it's in the executive branch, the judicial branch, or the legislative branch. And for 75 years after ratification of the Constitution, this kept all spending limited to the 20 enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8 of our Constitution. But in 1946, the progressives from both sides of the aisle wrote a footnote when they rewrote the U.S. Penal Code, the criminal code, that they then, from that day forward, they considered the common law grand jury obsolete. But fortunately for us, it can't be obsoleted because it's in the Fifth Amendment and the Seventh Amendment of our Constitution. So what we're in the process
to get rid of those amendments to get rid of the common law grand jury.
They would have to. So we're basically resurrecting something that became dormant.
And we're also protected by those same two amendments.
Correct.
Okay. And are you getting that word out to people? I mean, is there some place? I know that there's a website people can go to called NationalLibertyAlliance.org, O-R-G, and they can go on there, but there's just a wealth of information on that website. I think people probably get confused and don't really know where to go with it.
Right. Well, there's. It's important to go to the website and just browse the website, but then sign in and create a password, and one of the pieces of tabs becomes available called the Jurist tab.
Okay.
And under the Jurist tab, I would ask that people read up on the Jurist documents and the Jurist orientation. And this content was put together to train the average person who is interested in becoming a jurist so that they will be qualified to do the job.
Now, are people shying away from this because they don't understand it? Do they think it's not legitimate? I mean, do you find people resistant to this because they think that this is not going to do anything? It might just get them in trouble?
There is a little bit of fear, for sure, because it does take some courage to stand up against the current system and use our Constitution to be our defender. It's easier to just go along.
Right.
But fundamentally, as I reach out across the counties in Florida, what I found is that as soon as people really understand that this is a fundamental piece of the design of the government that the founders gave us, and that we fell asleep in 1946, we the people fell asleep, we let it go dormant, and now we're bringing it back to life. So what I found as people get educated, especially amongst the 9/12 groups and the Tea Party groups and the Campaign for Liberty groups, very, very quickly people understand, wow, now I understand how we got so far off course from the Constitution, and yes, this is very valuable and we must reconstitute it.
And do you see attorneys or anything kind of pushing against this, saying, wait a minute, you don't want to do this, it's not lawful? I mean, do you see any resistance coming from people that have passed the bar and are attorneys?
Yes. So certainly in law school today, well, let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
As the countries in Europe on the continent, and as England developed their legal systems, there were two very different systems. On the continent, they use a civil law system, and it came from Roman, it's otherwise known as Roman law. And the basic philosophy behind that legal system is that man is both smart enough and moral enough to design a set of laws that will lead to a productive, happy, and just society. The English, on the other hand, said, no, man is not smart enough nor moral enough, and instead we must look to nature and God for our laws and make sure that our laws are compatible with nature. So what you end up with is a set of laws, in the case of the continent, that are written by the politicians and the bureaucrats, and in the English common law case, you end up with laws that are written basically very simple common sense laws. So all the way up through the development of the country of America, the Declaration of Independence, these groups were very, very important in judging both the facts in a case and the law itself. So if it was a unconstitutional law, the common law grand jury could nullify it just by saying no one will be indicted for infringing on that law because it's null and void. By definition, it's unconstitutional, and therefore it's null and void. But all through the history, the legal profession and certain judges have worked against the common law grand jury. They complain it's cumbersome, it's slow. One person could make the decisions faster if just a judge or a prosecutor has the responsibility. But our forefathers thought about this and knew that it was important enough to build into the amendments to make sure that our rights were protected by fellow citizens sitting as the highest ranking court of record. Now let me explain that point very briefly. If you think about the situation a minute before the Declaration of Independence was signed and a minute after, a minute before the Declaration was signed, the highest ranking sovereign in the system was the King of England. And it is the highest ranking sovereign that gets to define what is law and what isn't law. Now, we snipped the cord to the king. In our system now, we've declared our independence, where is the highest ranking sovereign? And some of our founders had argued, well, let's nominate George Washington to be our king. But our founders were smart enough. They said, no, we are going to make the highest ranking sovereign in our system we the people. Ranked below we the people are the states that the people created, and ranked below the states is the general government or the federal government that the states created. So you can see that the highest ranking sovereign is we the people, such that when we come together as a group of 25 in the form of a common law grand jury and we take a decision, we are the highest ranking court of record in the land, meaning that not even the U.S. Supreme Court can review a decision taken by a common law grand jury.
That's mind-boggling.
Some people have great difficulty understanding that, but this is at the core of American exceptionalism, because throughout history, all human organizations have had one design, a pyramid, with the leader, be the leader a dictator, a king, a lord, or whatever, at the top of the pyramid, and we the people at the bottom working for the leader. And our founders said, no, we're not going to do that. We've seen enough tyranny in our day. We're going to flip that on its head, and the highest ranking sovereign is we the people, and below it are the states and then the federal government. So certainly in today's reality, it sure feels like that pyramid that our founders gave us has been inverted back to the old type.
Mm-hmm.
But we just need to stand up and fix the problem.
And like you said, you know, it takes some gumption to do that. But more than the gumption, it's the education so people understand the power of this.
It is a huge educational job in front of us, both for we the people and in the state of Florida. Florida statutes say that the Board of County Commissioners has the responsibility to provide both the space in the courthouse and the budget for the common law grand jury. So we must educate our current leaders because they don't understand it, and furthermore, it has been ripped out of law school education.
I wonder why.
Right.
Now, Roger,
excuse me?
You're trying to educate your county commissioners. Do you recommend that a group of you make an appointment one-on-one or two or just one person one-on-one with your county commissioners trying to introduce them to this concept and not scare them to death?
We don't have a recommended approach yet. We're experimenting. We have two or three different methods, but the basic approach is that we use the official board meeting to present during different sessions the history, and then in most cases we use something called a writ of mandamus, which
right.
says we command you, and in this case it's we command you to give us access to the grand jury room in the courthouse. And then there's a sequence of educational steps that need to be taken, and then in some cases we voluntarily called up the commissioners one-on-one and asked if we could come into their office and spend an hour and educate them, and in some cases we've been successful, in other cases the commissioners have declined.
Mm.
Now, how many counties do you have registered or constituted in Florida so far?
As of today, we have 60 of the 67 counties are reconstituted. By the end of the day on Saturday, this coming Saturday, the 15th of March, according to our plans, we should have all 67 counties reconstituted.
By reconstituted, go ahead. What was that, Sally?
Okay. I just want to let you know we have a caller who looks like they either have a question or comment, so just let me know when you're ready.
Oh, go ahead, and we'll hear from the caller.
Okay, the caller, the last four digits are 2083. Caller, you're on the phone. Please, on the air. Please let us know what your name is. Hello.
Yes, hello. This is Dr. Conard. I just tuned in to listen to the interview and find myself very interested in the potential movement or the movement to potentially gain the common law grand jury concept in our county.
Well, welcome, Dr. Cotter. Now, what exactly, is this your first exposure to this, or have you heard of it before?
No, I have heard of it. I was a part of a meeting back in November when Mr. Dowdle was presenting this and actually even agreed that if they're successful in their efforts, I would be willing to act as a jurist for them.
Roger, would you want to speak to Dr. Cotter about this, or...
Yes, he's been a very active supporter, and he clearly understands that it is a big education project that we've got in front of us.
I think that's the key. That's crucial to have people working on this that are really taking the time to educate themselves. And this is not a little thing. This is a major undertaking for people that are involved.
That's correct, and it's particularly difficult sometimes for people that are introduced to it for the first time because it is pretty foreign to the way our systems are running today. But I can tell you a quick little anecdote. When we did hold the meeting in Manatee County, we ended up having 28 people show up, and a good deal of them, probably over half, were motivated to come to the meeting because they or someone they know or love had been seriously abused by our judicial system.
And I see that trend more and more as we go along. I think Neil and Sally both can attest to the fact that there was an arrest recently that really should never have happened. It was a person exercising their First Amendment right. And the way the whole situation came down, it was unnecessary.
There is an awful lot of unnecessary penalties, and there are two very important fundamental principles about common law. The first is that for every injury, there must be a remedy, and the second is that for there to be a crime, there must be a victim, and the state cannot be the victim. So if you look at everybody that's getting fined or sent to jail with no victim, all of that is unconstitutional, and it's makes it impossible, because one of the fundamental issues of common law is that if I injure you, it is my duty to restore you.
Right.
And how can I restore you if I'm put in jail?
Well, not only that, how if there's no injury done,
correct,
why are you put in jail? If there is no harm, if no
right.
harm has been done, how can you be arrested for exercising your First Amendment right? You have not hurt anyone. You've not caused any harm to anyone.
Well, and understand that what you're witnessing is a judicial system that lost its oversight function, its check and balance in 1946. So this is, you know, 50, 60 years later, you're starting to see the results of that.
Now, Roger, if people are interested, they can go to the website, nationallibertyalliance.org, and when you're up there on the website, I'll ask you to sign in, you know, to register, which is a simple process. And like you said, once that pops up, then you have a jurist little bar that you can go and look at. Some people are having problems with the website in getting crucial documents downloaded that they need. Is there any place else they can go to get some assistance?
I'd say on the website, the best idea is that if they are having some serious problems, call the state coordinator, and here in Florida, it's either Hagen Smith or myself, and our emails and phone numbers are on the site, and we will do our best to resolve any problems that do happen.
Okay, so I'm on the site right now, so I'm going to go ahead and just monkey around with it like I'm a newbie, like anybody else that's just trying to figure out what's going on. So am I going to go to welcome? Where am I going to find you? Am I going to go under state or what?
Well, the design of the homepage was really to try to bring your attention to a video that's right in the middle of the page.
Okay.
And it's a good, it's a 29 or 30 minute or something like that video that is a good summary. The title of the video is The Power of the Grand Jury. And it really does lay out pretty clearly how important common law grand jury is, especially given the problems we face today. Because if you looked at all of the major problems we face, if we could restore our Constitution and hold our political leaders to their oath of office, which is to preserve and protect and defend the Constitution, we would solve an awful lot of our problems.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Dr. Cotter, was there anything you wanted to add or ask?
No, I think Mr. Donald's doing a remarkable job. I appreciate the update on the status, and I will watch with great interest, and I appreciate being involved in understanding this.
And we really appreciate you, because it's going to take people just like you, sir, to step up and show the interest and then take the next step to actually educate yourself and become involved, and we really do appreciate you.
People are really standing up now. In fact, the education process includes the need to educate the other officers in the county, for example, the sheriff,
right,
and bring forward the history. And there is a book that is available on the web that you can read called The People's Panel. And it's by an author by Younger. It was published in 1963, so it's no longer in print. But if you search that, The People's Panel, you can read it a page at a time on the web, and it covers the history of the common law grand jury in the U.S. from 1634 to about 1941.
Now, where would I find that? Because right now I'm on your website, and I've clicked on books, PDF.
I'm not sure it's on the website. Sorry, I meant to do a search, a Google search for.
Okay, what was the name of that again?
The People's Panel.
Okay, The People's Panel.
And what it is filled with really a lot of anecdotes about the success. For example, during much of the fast industrialization of the country, many of the cities, corruption really got out of control. New York, Philadelphia, Buffalo. And the only thing that really was the catalyst to straighten them out was the common law grand jury.
Wow.
Now we're calling it the common law grand jury today to differentiate it from today's grand jury, which is really called a puppet grand jury. It is under the control of the prosecutor. It is under the control of the judge. And furthermore, they're instructed not to judge the law, but just to judge the evidence. In 1992, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia wrote a very important decision that says the common law grand jury is not part of the government. It is not to be supervised by the court. It is a constitutional fixture on its own, owned by we the people for the benefit of we the people. He even calls it a fourth branch of our government.
Do you think he was sending a message to us with that judgment?
In my opinion, he really was. He went well out of his way to make sure we understood the history and the capability and the power of the common law grand jury. And I believe he was hopeful that someday we would wake up and realize that we had lost it and we needed to reinstate it.
It was almost like he sent up a rescue flare.
That's what I think. I agree.
People were paying attention, and now you are. Cling on to it, people. Well, this is fascinating. Is there anything else that our listeners need to know about to get involved? I mean, you're giving us some great history, but just looking at your website, there's tons and tons of information here. And I think the thing that most of us are intrigued with is that, yes, we want to get involved. We do want to move forward. But then it's like we're at a stopgap. We don't know what to do. To get started in your county, you want to find a county administrator, correct?
Yeah, we call them county organizers, so you can find that on the website, right? You can look up.
And then from there you would call the county organizer?
Yep, and just say you'd like to become involved. And many of the counties are having weekly meetings that are all about education.
Okay.
And or email lists. And some of the counties, for example, Highlands County in the midsection of the state is really grabbing hold and mobilizing their efforts pretty strongly to stand up their common law grand jury.
And now who's heading up the one in Highlands? Who's the organizer for that area?
John Drozinski. His name is John on the list under Highlands County. So he's listed under Highlands County, John, and his phone number's there.
Now, did he have any kind of background in law before he got interested in this?
He was a fireman.
Wow.
So we've done two sessions out there to help them learn about it, and then they're digging in on their own, and it's really coming together quite quickly.
Well, I know of an individual that's very involved. She loves to do a lot of research, works tirelessly, has written a ton of articles, and I know that she wants to get involved and has really been trying to educate herself and get those around her educated. And it's a daunting process. And
it is.
Don't forget that it's
all based on the Constitution. So if you read and understand the Constitution and study it and talk with people about it, it is, you know, fundamentally common sense after the Constitution. But don't forget that the power of this, it is an investigatory body. So it is not the trial jury that decides guilt or innocence. It is the body that does the investigation to decide who is going to stand trial. But it's very easy. For example, in the history of the U.S., after a while, prohibition was written into our Constitution, so it became part of the supreme law of the land. But after a while, the common law grand juries around the country realized that this was really a bad law, even though it's in the Constitution. It's a bad law because they're seeing their friends, their neighbors, their relatives rotting their lives away in prison for taking a cup of moonshine.
Right, exactly.
So the common law grand juries decided that they would no longer indict or present anyone for alcohol consumption or production. And it was only after that happened that the politicians decided that they had to re-amend the Constitution to nullify it. So it's a very powerful thing. And in today's environment where we have this overreach from Washington, D.C. with these unconstitutional initiatives like Obamacare, Common Core, gun control, all of these things can be nullified at the borders of the county by the common law grand jury, and as the states, counties reconstitute themselves, their juries, they can be nullified at the borders of the state.
And you're making, okay, so you're making a lot of this sound like we are the investigative arm, correct?
It is an investigative effort, yes.
Now, I've got a question for you. What if you have a situation where perhaps you've got someone in the police force that's corrupt, but another police officer wants assistance? Could a common law grand jury help that police officer?
Yes. Okay. Now, everything that the common law grand jury does is secret, because many of the investigations can be of innocent people. So we're not out to damage people. Mm-hmm. We operate under the principles of justice, honor, and mercy, but we do accept evidence from anyone, and then the common law grand jury will have 4 full-time administrator investigators. These are the people that will do the investigation, and I'll give you a simple example, Sherry. Say 100 years ago, say I stole your cow, and you might complain to the grand jury, and one of the administrators would come out and say, hey, Mr. Dowdell, I understood you stole Sherry's cow. And I'd say, yeah, but I was very hungry. Well, he would say, well, listen, what are you going to do, Roger, to restore Sherry? She might take 3 of your calves in return. She might take a couple of cords of firewood and some vegetables. But what are you going to do to restore Sherry? And the administrator would only refer the problem to the 25 jurors to indict if you and I were not able to come to an agreement.
Oh, so that's much nicer. It's a much friendlier way to do business.
Much better. It keeps most of the disputes out of the court system.
Which is what we want. Ultimately, we want to be able to handle things like decent human beings.
Exactly. And this is how this country operated for easily 75 years after the ratification of the Constitution.
Yeah, I think most times when people are caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and they've been caught, I think most people are willing, they're full of shame, and they're willing to make restitution, make good, and just to relieve, if nothing else, their own spirit.
Sure, but also even accidents happen. You know, I might run into your car or something. And at the end of the day, the principles of common law are really focused on restoring the victim. And today's society, we're finding that people are thrown in jail with no victims, and they're fined, and a good deal of the fine money actually goes into the retirement program for the judges.
Yeah, which is kind of a sickening process to think about all the way around. Yeah.
It definitely creates the wrong incentives.
Absolutely. Now, getting back to the person that's a good researcher, Neil Rice is the co-host, is an expert researcher. She's an avid, tireless individual who does countless hours researching. So she would be perfect for this. So is there any way say Neil's already got the researching aspect down, does she have to panic and freak out about not knowing every little aspect of the common law grand jury, or what?
No, because, number one, she can do the work on the site under the jurist tab, reading the jurist documents and taking the jurist orientation. The jurist orientation itself is about 3.5 to 4 hours of videos.
Got it.
But at the end of the day, the implementation of common law is really based on a few principles and common sense. It is really pretty straightforward.
And I see that under the jurors, she also had the book 5,000 Year Leap, which I've already read. It's a great book.
Yep.
And then you've got the state plan, the national plan, and how to start a jury. Yeah, so it looks like you've got everything pretty much right there. So if she was to click through each and every one of those, how long would it take her to get through this?
As I say, the jurist orientation itself is about 3.5 to 4 hours.
Right.
I've already spent a couple days on it because I've gone mad.
Yes, That's what I was thinking. You know, it's like you don't have to be, you don't have it, have to have it memorized backwards and forwards to be proficient. Mm-hmm.
Well, here I have a question, if I may, Roger. This is Neil.
Hi, Neil.
I am getting out and getting people interested in this, giving them information where to go, check this out, and getting back with them. So I would have them go to this Juris tab as I've been talking to them. I did get a hold of one of the juror handbooks. And I wish I could do more because I would love to be able to give these people one. But anyway, after they go through this Juris tab, what would be the next step to help educate them? Is there, what are we going to do, hold a class or?
There are, as if possible, they would get in contact with their local county organizer or If they don't have an organizer, they would step up and potentially become that organizer. Then every Monday night at 9 o'clock, there's a weekly three-hour conference call. And on this call, you not only learn a lot about what's going on in the rest of the country, but you're able to ask questions and you're able to participate in a nationwide chat room. So you can put questions out there also. So there's a lot of conversations going on across the nation helping each person gain the knowledge that they need.
Right, because I don't have that knowledge right now, and I would not want to mislead anybody. I wouldn't even want to say anything unless I knew exactly what I'm talking about.
Right, but don't forget I mentioned the two principles, right? For every injury, there must be a remedy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And for there to be a crime, there must be a victim, and the state cannot be the victim. Now, those principles are pretty straightforward. They're not that complex. And if you operate with justice, honor, and mercy, then you're in pretty darn good shape.
That's right. And as you were talking, I was thinking of something else popped in my mind, but I see who's online right now, and I see John Durash is on. So I think he's constantly updating what he's saying. But, Neil, back to your point of not knowing. When you listen into the Monday calls, I've noticed a lot of repetition. So if you miss something at one point, it's constantly repeated. So if you think you missed something, you're picking up something new. So they're very patient, and it's just an amazing organization. And John Durash has worked so hard on this.
There is an archive of the previous calls, so you can go into the history and just start at the beginning and listen to each one if you'd like.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, absolutely. And just take notes. And I guess you're pretty open to having people call you and ask questions, right?
Sure. And one of the things that I discovered as I dug into this is that I thought I understood our system of government and our Constitution. And the more I dug in, I ended up having to read the Constitution about 4, 5, 6 times before I really began to understand how it all fits together.
Right.
And one example of our problem, and I'm a product of our public school system through K through 12 or 1 through 12, and I was always under the impression that it was the Supreme Court's duty and they had the authority to decide if an act of Congress was constitutional or not. And that's the way throughout my lifetime I thought the system was working.
Yeah, that's what you assumed.
Right. And then I read carefully Article 3 in the Constitution, which is about our judiciary, and nowhere is the Supreme Court given the authority to decide on the constitutionality of any act of Congress. And I'm scratching my head saying, this is pretty curious. You know, the reality today is very different than what the Constitution says it is to be. And then I did a little more thinking about it. I said, well, that's interesting. The 13 sovereign nations, in other words, they signed the Declaration of Independence and they became 13 sovereign nations, and they would never have ratified a constitution if a provision in that constitution was that if there was a dispute between the states and the general government that the states created, the federal government, that it would be arbitrated by a division of that general government.
Right.
They never would have signed up. It never would have been ratified. So, in essence, there's been an abdication all the way around from we the people abdicating our responsibility to stand up and nullify unconstitutional laws and rules and regulations. The governors and the legislatures of every state could stand up and say, you know what, that Obamacare thing is unconstitutional. And by the way, Mr. Roberts of the Supreme Court, you have no authority to judge whether it's constitutional or not.
Yeah, exactly. You know, as you sit there and listen, and the other thing people don't understand, those are just opinions.
Right. And now in the case of Florida, of course, Common Core is a big issue.
Oh, yeah.
Not only do we find out that in the Constitution the federal government has no right and no authority to define educational standards, we went further and we did some research into the Constitution of the state of Florida and the Florida statutes, and nowhere is the authority given to them and ripped away from parents to decide the standards or the curriculum. In fact, under common law, it is the responsibility of the parents, and they have the full decision-making authority over the education and anything else that influences the kids until the age of majority.
So let's take what you just said, because that's so important. And I believe you even wrote an article about it. And I shared that article with several people, because you gave a wealth of information in there about a way to address Common Core and taking our rights back. Shouldn't we be taking that article that you wrote and hitting our legislators over the head with it?
I don't think so. I don't think it would be very productive, and here's the reason.
I wrapped it in a brick.
Well, we're up against what I call a monolithic extractive elite ruling class. These folks have these huge incentives, huge monetary incentives and power incentives to do what they're doing.
Yeah.
And for them to turn around and act as if the Constitution really mattered is just asking too much, in my opinion. Instead, what the path forward I would recommend is that a bunch of like-minded parents in a county stand together and stand up to the school board and say, we do not consent, and by the way, you only have authority from the consent of the governed, so we do not consent, we will not comply, and you stand by and we will give you the standards and the curriculum. And I've talked to a number of people who said, well, if we had that opportunity, we would grab the 2008-2009 Massachusetts state education curriculum, because at the time it was pretty well known as one of the highest performing ones in the union, and we would give that to our board, our district school board, and say, this is what we want our kids to be used educating our kids. But if we're not willing to stand up and push back, then the bureaucracy and Congress and the state legislature will take as much power and as much money as they can.
Yeah, I see that as the big bitter pill. You know, now that people are starting to wake up and get involved, they're beginning, I think, beginning to see that we really are in trouble here, folks. You know, when you think of the average parent who's, both of them are working, and when they go and talk to their child's teacher because they're concerned about what's going on with the curriculum, and then that teacher tells you, gee, I don't have any authority over this, then they talk to the principal, and then the principal shoves them over to the school board, and the school board shoves them over to Tallahassee, it becomes a nightmare for a parent. It's overwhelming. They don't know where to begin and who is going to be the final authority. And then when it comes right back to the parent, you are.
Exactly. And there's no way under our Constitution that anyone can, and common law, that anyone can rip that responsibility and authority away. And if you read the statutes very clearly, they never do that. The closest thing they come to is in one part of the statutes, they say that the school board must provide, quote, adequate materials.
Which, to me, could be very basic.
It is, and it's up to us. If we want to stand up and push back, we can do that. It is constitutional and common law supported. But it's our choice.
This is something that should be brought directly to the Tallahassee Board of Education, because that is where the material and all the books and the working material that goes with the books is coming from. I mean, you can go to your local board and say this, but they still have the same material. It's the curriculum that they have, that I have seen, that is indoctrinating our children.
Right, but it's both the curriculum and the standards, because even if you give up control of the curriculum and someone holds control of the standards, that can end up driving the curriculum.
Right.
So at the end of the day, there is an argument that says that these bureaucrats are basically going to be willing to go forward and go as far as we will allow them to go. And they will run our lives, and they will teach our kids what they want taught. But if we don't want that, we have to stand up as free men and women, and we decide, because we are the highest-ranking sovereign in the system.
Yeah, it's time for parents to exercise their vocal cords.
Right, and it becomes very simple, because the Constitution says that, number one, Article 4, Section 4 says that every state is guaranteed a Republican form of government,
mm-hmm.
and that's not being executed. And number two, there are some parts of the curriculum that could be argued are aimed at undermining our Constitution. And that is also against the public officials' oaths of office.
Right, exactly. And that's another thing we have to look at, is the oath of office. It needs to be changed. Very interesting. Okay, so now we're on the website. You know, you've played around with it. You've contacted your local organizer, county organizer. You're getting involved. And some people, I see there's a list of questions once you get into the welcome people that were concerned. You know, if I'm called up, how do I serve? What if I can't serve? That kind of thing. Do you get paid if you serve? And all of that. Do you want to go into any of that at all in case people are listening?
No, I think it's pretty straightforward. It is a voluntary effort, but each grand jury in each county will have 4 full-time administrators that will be paid from the county a professional salary. Then once we get enough of the counties up and running, we will ask them to donate or nominate 2 members of their grand jury to a statewide unified grand jury. And the statewide unified grand jury can then attack some of the unconstitutional behavior going on in Tallahassee.
Now, I've met with some resistance from a couple of folks that I've spoken to about this, and whenever the subject of money comes up, they just freak out. Oh, no, you mean you're going to pay somebody to do this? What is wrong with people that they don't understand that, you know, it takes gas money to do things, folks? It takes money to restore our republic. And it just kind of offends me in a way that some of these people out there think that you shouldn't be paid for anything that you're doing.
Well, I did a quick calculation across the whole state if all 67 counties were up and running,
mm-hmm.
and it would represent a little bit more than 1% of the state budget. Not the county budget, but the state budget.
Yeah, so we're talking, and we're talking that's fairly inexpensive to regain some lawfulness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Very inexpensive.
Yeah, to me that's an expense I would enjoy rather than some of the other things that we're spending money on. Neil, is there anything that you're thinking about that you'd like to ask?
Well, not right now at this point because, like I said, I'm educating myself and I'm trying to get more and more people to come on board, and it's taking me a little time with that because I want to find good Christian people that know right from wrong and are willing to get educated more on the Constitution. I mean, those are the 3 things that I am looking for in anybody that wants to get involved. Once I get registered with a clerk here, then I need to know my next step, where to go.
Hagen Smith will be giving courses on the Constitution, and we will notify everybody that's registered at the NLA website of those courses, the time and place, et cetera, and we'll also video them and get them posted. And he does an absolute great job on helping people understand the Constitution.
Oh, and there's great. Several places you can go to learn the Constitution
yep.
that are free, that are online. And you can do them at your leisure, 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there. And they're not boring. They're very, very interesting. The Constitution Club has a free one, but it's really good. The guy's an excellent speaker. You're engaged. And like I said, it's not overwhelming. You can do it in little bits and bites whenever you have time.
And if you looked at almost all the problems we face as a nation, as best I can tell, they can be easily solved if we could restore our Constitution. So mm-hmm. if we could get everybody on board, and instead of fighting these little initiatives or these initiatives that are all separate, like Obamacare and Common Core and gun rights and property rights, we have a tool in the common law grand jury that will solve all of those problems and recenter the nation onto our Constitution.
Amen.
Yes, amen.
Now, how did you get involved on a personal note? How did you personally get involved? What drove you to do this? And I mean, because you really have a passion for it, and it seems like once you got involved, you just took off with it. How did that come about?
Well, it was we did an analysis after the 2012 election, and we concluded that out of that effort, we did not get a good return on our effort, both nations and labor. And then we did an analysis and asked, well, what is the game we're in? And the game we're in is a continuous stream of unconstitutional initiatives. And believe me, they already have the next two or three invented that we have no clue what the next ones are going to be. But you see the Obamacare, Common Core, gun control.
Getting your guns, yeah.
Amnesty, all this stuff is unconstitutional. And so we asked ourselves, well, is there one goal that if we got everybody unified behind that one goal instead of fighting all these separate fires, that we could really move the ball forward and solve a lot of these problems?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer became pretty clear, yes, restore our Constitution.
Right.
So once we did that, we then did a survey of all the different liberty groups across the country trying to figure out, well, who's got a process or a method of restoring our Constitution. And I stumbled on these folks up in New York, and it was kind of surprising to me that I found them in New York, of all places, but after 5 or 6 years of bouncing in and out of court on different problems, they figured out that we have a dual legal system. We have a common law system that we were founded with, but the progressives have also created a statute law system to try to tell us how to live our lives.
Oh, yes.
But the statutes themselves were designed to tell the government bureaucrats how to do their job. So they really don't apply to we the people unless we voluntarily accept them. So then we learned how to make sure we didn't sign something that was interpreted as voluntarily accepting them. But initially, I got to tell you, Sherry, when I first heard the claims on the first conference call back in August of last year that I listened in on, I said, no, these guys are... They got to be smoking dope. There's something wrong here. How, you mean to tell me that we let the whole legal system get hijacked? I can't
yes.
believe it. So then I did my own due diligence. I dug into the original documents. I went back to the Magna Carta and read the Magna Carta. Everything these guys were saying was accurate. I couldn't believe it. And then once I understood that, you know, this is the path back to the Constitution. It is lawful. It is in our history. The history is very full from 1643 to 1941. It's documented in a book. So it's against the monster we're up against, this out-of-control bureaucracy that is full of tyranny. It is the best single way back towards the Constitution that we can find. And it's hard work. There is a lot of hard work, and it's a lot of effort, but a lot of people are digging in. It's a big team effort building up across the country.
Mm-hmm.
48
well,
out of...
I'm just taking heart from the time that I met you, which is at Faith and Freedom at the church, and from now, how much progress has already been made in Florida.
Exactly.
It's been like a little wildfire.
That's exactly what's going on. And one county will turn on, and then they'll turn on their neighbors. And it's spreading rapidly. As you see it spread in Florida, likewise it's spreading across the country.
Yeah, and it's something that seems to really resonate with people. Because once you hear it, you realize, okay, this is the truth. And if we get back to the truth in a lawful manner, then we can take a lot of this away. A lot of this tyranny can be wiped out.
Exactly. And there is an argument that we don't have much time.
Yeah.
So we are on a...
I think we all feel that urgency, that sense of urgency.
I'm sorry?
I think we all feel that sense of urgency, that we've got to hurry up, and really it's like we've been asleep and now we're waking up and we realize, oh my gosh, we're about to get hit with the midterm exam and there's not much time to study.
Yeah, or we're about to drive off the cliff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, but you don't want to be all doom and gloom. Thank goodness for people like you that you're doing what you're doing. You're spreading the word. And you're helping people like Neil and myself get a little more educated and get a little more involved.
And fundamental to our realization was we worked very, very hard as a group of Tea Parties and as Freedom Works, et cetera, to get some conservative candidates elected to the Senate in 2010 and even again in 2012. And we had about a 50% hit rate. What do I mean by that? I mean, guys like Marco Rubio and Jeff Flake were elected as very staunch constitutional conservatives, but once they got into D.C., they got captured by the bad incentives and started to vote with the progressives.
We see that at every level here locally as well. You know, we work our little hearts out for people that we think are going to be honorable candidates. They get in, all of a sudden they have become, I call it become, and they become a part of the political class.
Right.
And they've been lobbied, and they've been promised, and it seems to only take 12 months, and boom, you don't recognize them anymore.
That's right. And once we figured that out, we said, well, wait a minute. If we get ourselves recentered on the Constitution and start by recentering the 3,141 counties across the U.S., if we can accomplish this, does it really make that big a deal of difference whether the leader, political leader in a given position has an R or D against their name as long as they're following the Constitution?
Yeah,
it's
don't care. I don't care. I even today I mentioned that on another program, that I don't care what you are, Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, no party affiliated, as long as you're a constitutional person and you're going to abide by that, I don't care about the rest of it. A party is nothing but a lobby anyway. You're just lobbying for something you believe in. Well, if you believe in the Constitution, we shouldn't really have a party.
And think about this. Within the system you're aware of course, the progressives will say, well, you folks have a system to hold people accountable to the Constitution. It's called the voting booth. And what they leave out is we have another key element that the founders gave us, which is the common law grand jury.
I like
and that's
the jury a lot better than
we missing.
But we've worked on the voting booth, and that doesn't seem to work real well.
That's the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it is 7:58. We have two more minutes. Is there anything else you'd like to say to sum up, Roger, and invite people again? The website is nationallibertyalliance.org. You can sign up there. Everything you need to find out who can, phone numbers, everything you're going to need to make contact with is right on the website. But is there anything else, Roger, that people need to know?
Well, we really do need everybody's help. This is a big, big effort. It's a lot of education. Constitutionally centered patriots are going to pick up on this real fast. It's very little education for them. But if at all possible, if they can sign up and become a jurist, if they can sign up and become an organizer for their county, if there isn't one, we really do need their help. And with their help, we will turn this situation around.
And just to let people know, there is some backup for them out there. In other words, you're not going to leave people hanging. So if they've got questions, there's always someone that they can call to get support.
Right. And every Monday night, there's a three-hour call where they can call in and ask questions. They can put them in the chat room. They can put them on the air to John Durash, the leader of the effort. It's a very open, grassroots, bottom-up organization.
And where would they find that number, Roger?
It's on the website on the front page, It says Monday Night Call. You'll just click on that, and it gives you the number and or can connect you right to the conference call.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sally, did you have anything that you'd like to add?
Well, I'm not sure if you want to take the time at this point, but I'm kind of curious when we talk about this. I think of this case that's been going on up in Boston with the girl that's been taken away from the parents. And how constitutional. And I'm like thinking out of this process, how would we go about it to say what they're doing is wrong? I mean, this hospital is illegally holding their daughter, and what do they do without landing in jail themselves?
If a common law grand jury were in place in the county in Boston, it would be very easy for them to say, wait a minute, that is totally unconstitutional. You cannot do that. And immediately that would be rectified straight away.
Would they present
them with,
what would they do? Like, because we understand, from my understanding, and Sally, I don't know, you can probably clarify it. It's a doctor in a hospital. And
the evidence would have to be developed, and the grand jury has this investigative power. No one can block the operation of the investigators. For example, if the grand jury investigators want to investigate a person and he turned out to be a good friend of the highest-ranking judge in the county, if that judge tries to block or slow down the investigation, he or she can get up to 20 years in jail. So there's no way anybody can stand in the way of it, and the evidence would be presented to the grand jury that the parental rights were being abridged, and they would be reinstated straight away. And whoever was doing that would be indicted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because, I mean, I understand it that way, but here you've got Glenn Beck, who's been out there pushing this issue. This has been being a nationwide issue,
right?
And no one seems to be able to make that happen in Boston. Now, I mean, this is what amazes me. It's like, we know what they're doing wrong, yet we can't seem to get anything done about it. And it irks me to no end that we know it's wrong. And, I mean, you got Glenn Beck and these people who have a lot of access to a lot of people, and no one
seems
to be able to do this.
Yeah, he even contacted Ron Paul about it. I know.
But notice what's going on, folks. We're all trying to push back using public opinion. And, yes,
right.
To a certain extent, politicians will listen to it, and it depends how close their next election is. But it's much better if we have a tool like a common law grand jury where we actually use the Constitution and the law.
That's right.
Much more effective.
Yeah.
If a public officer steps outside of their oath of office, they are liable in their private capacity. Their skin is on the line.
With that very statement right there, and you can take this at the state or the federal level, they have all stepped over the line when they refused to secure the border of this homeland.
Right.
Well,
that's
the most fundamental thing of the federal government is to secure this homeland, yet they're letting the invasion come in. They're letting illegals practice law, all these things that are so obvious, and yet trying to get the power, get the people together, whatever it takes to make something happen, and yet everybody will stand there and say it's wrong, but yet nothing changes.
On that point, Article 1, Section 10 has a very important phrase in it. And it says what the states cannot do. For example, can't keep troops or ships of war in time of peace or something like that. And then it says, comma, unless actually invaded. Meaning that if a state, which at the time of the Constitution being ratified, was a sovereign nation and it gave up some of its sovereignty when it ratified the document, but if it's under invasion, all bets are off. The state can do whatever it wants to do to protect itself. We, the people, have to stand up and tell our state leaders, this is totally on your shoulders, guys. You've got to go fix this.
And isn't that exactly what Arizona tried to do?
They did. And ultimately, the bullies in D.C. overwhelmed them. But I don't think they had the will of the people behind them strong enough. Or maybe they did. I don't know. But ultimately, if you read the Constitution, Article 1, Section 10 is very clear, unless actually invaded, meaning that these limitations on the actions of the state are void if they're being invaded. They can do whatever they need to do.
And I'm telling you, I totally understand that. I totally appreciate it. That's what I want to happen. But it just seems like the Constitution has been so eroded. It seems like the police state that has taken over, this is the part that is what I find frustrating. It's not. I definitely believe in what this is doing and want, hope and pray that we can make it happen the way it needs to. It's just I keep seeing time and time again the lawlessness is what is ruling. Everything that president is doing, making his own laws right now, is lawlessness.
Right.
He's going out there giving all these rights, and obviously Congress isn't going to do anything about it. And when they're going out there giving our money away to the illegals who don't belong here, who have invaded, because that's what they are, they're invaders, yet it seems like we're powerless, the people are powerless to stop it. Unless maybe this is what May 16th is all about in Washington, and hopefully in a lot of capitals, I don't know.
Let me make sure that, from my perspective at least, part of the solution is the fact that someone needs to be held accountable to their oath of office and get their job done that isn't now doing their job.
Right.
And that can be done with a common law grand jury. We can hold our leaders, our political leaders, office holders, and bureaucrats accountable to their oaths of office.
Well, I want to be part of that grand jury that's going to go after Marco Rubio. You mentioned Rubio. I knew way back when what he was. He was always pro-amnesty, always whatever you want to call it. I never voted for the guy, and I tried to tell people not to vote for him. Yes, he had a pretty face, blah, blah, blah. And that's all it was. He had a pretty face, and he said what people wanted to hear. Then he went out there and he did all his amnesty stuff. Right now I want to know where that grand jury is. Common grand jury is going to be for Marco Rubio because I want to go after him because he's violated his oath of office. I'm signing up right now for it.
Okay, great
thank
girl.
You. Thank you.
And again, if you want to listen to it, it's on Monday evenings at 9 p.m., and the call-in number to listen to the common law grand jury is 323-784-9705, Monday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 323-784-9705. Tonight's guest has been Roger Dowdle, and he's been a wonderful guest with a wealth of information, and I can't thank you enough for your time.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Excuse me, can we get one last question in real quick? Somebody's called in after.
I'm sorry, don't go away, Roger.
Sure,
okay,
go ahead.
You got just a couple minutes. Charlie, you're out there. We know you're big on this. Go ahead, Charlie.
Hey, Charlie.
Yeah. Hi there.
Hey, Charlie, what's your question for Roger?
Well, sign me up.
Okay, did you go to the website?
Thank you, Charlie.
You're welcome.
Did you go to the website, Charlie? We're looking for your name. Okay.
I don't have a website. I don't have a computer now. I'm still working on getting one.
Okay, great. Did you get the phone number to call?
Go ahead and put me in there because I just saw something that really irks me. The EPA has been using the credit cards for personal purchases along like the IRS.
Yep.
So there are two things that we need to file a lawsuit against them right now. Really get it in there as soon as possible and do the right to audit the IRS and audit all of the bureaucracies and go after all of that money that is additional income for them, which means they're now subject to principal, penalty, and interest, just like they come after we the people.
Oh, absolutely. And can you imagine, Charlie, if we re-inhabited the money that has been really basically stolen from us, can you imagine that we wouldn't really have a problem in our country?
No,
we'd
probably be down to $5 trillion in debt instead of 17.
Absolutely.
Well, Sherry, you know, since Charlie, he doesn't have the computer, we need to make sure that he gets one of the common law handbooks for jurors, sheriffs, and the whole thing, you know, that would help him a great deal.
I'll just go to the next meeting over here at the, when it's in Orlando. They have one, I think, every once a month or something at that sports bar.
Okay.
Over on Orange.
It really will
one.
Help you if you can get your hands on that. It's a soft copy. Very easy to understand.
And
it's
not real
a great
long.
Read. Yeah, it's not a big book.
It's a short book.
Yeah, it really gets you going. in the right
direction. All right, if you get one to Sally, I'll go pick it up from Sally's then, if you got, you want to do it that way.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, for
or
sure,
you've already got her address.
Yep.
Okay.
We'll figure a way.
Okay, I really
we'll figure a way. I'll get
in,
it. Yeah, just go ahead and sign me up. That way we'll get the numbers up there so we can start going after these crooks.
Absolutely. And believe me, I think our days will be full just doing that.
You know, see, D.C. now stands for the District of Criminals, the District of Corruption.
Oh, they've been the District of Criminals for years. It's just now, it's like we just need to put barbed wire around the whole D.C. area. Just barbed wire them in. Just let them stay there.
Yeah, with, along with the lobbyists.
Business.
Your lobbyists welcome.
Yeah, and
but
your
no business. But all the business will be taken care of in the States. Okay.
Thank you so
Roger,
much,
Roger. And thank you so very much, Roger, for
yeah, Roger,
all your
thank
time
you.
And all your hard work. And we can't say thank you enough.
Well, thanks for your support. I really appreciate it.
And we'll
you
talk
bet.
To you soon.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank
night.
You.
Night, Neil.
Okay.
Night, Sally.
Night.
Okay. Well, I'm going to continue on with the discussion about the Expressway Authority. So, as I was telling people earlier, the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority. There's two bills right now in the state, in Tallahassee, that is trying to destroy the express, trying to expand the Expressway Authority. So I need everybody out there to listen, to take down some information, contact your representative and your senator, and go in and look at these bills. It's Senate Bill SB 320 and House Bill 311. You go into the Florida, My Florida Government website and find the bills. You can go to the Senate, Florida Senate page, Senator Senate page, Florida House page, look up the bills and see what committees are looking at them. Then you contact everybody on those committees. And if you want all their email addresses, they don't. You can either send them emails via the web pages, because that's what most of them do now, or you download or go into the House directory and the Senate directory to get their direct email addresses. It's quite easy to do on that stuff. And send them an email and let them know you do not support more corruption. Time to put an end to more corruption. But what they're trying to do is take the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority, which is already corrupt. It's under investigation as we speak. And it's going to, they want to have it cover all of Central Florida. Right now it's Orange County, Orlando Orange County, which is, Orlando is within Orange County. And now they want to expand it to other counties around it. It's already so corrupt. How could you do that? Why would you do that? So we've got to get this message out there. No. You can send me an email at AmericanStatesman@1791.com if you want information on it. AmericanStatesman@1791.com, and I will forward to you the information I have sent. I have put it out there. In fact, I will read it on the air here. Let me get to it. I called it on this email that I sent. And again, I sent this email to my senator, Darren Soto, and my state representative, Victor Torres, and then I sent it to everybody on the House Transportation and Economic Development Appropriations Subcommittee members, but I need to send it to some other committees too, but this is this one. So I put it to their attention, and I say, vote no to more corruption, Senate Bill 230, House Bill 311, Orange County Expressway Authority, no Central Florida Expressway Authority. The Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority continues to be a culture of corruption, and now throughout this whole thing it's OOCEA, Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority. I strongly oppose the renaming of the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority and giving the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority authority over the entire Central Florida area. To expand the Expressway Authority, the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority, is to promote more corruption and create more problems for transportation. As an Orange County resident, I know how corrupt this quasi-governmental agency is. They are not elected, and they are accountable to no one. I will gladly meet with any of you to discuss the facts of this very serious issue. The Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority is too corrupt and cannot be trusted. Not now, not ever. The Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority is once again being investigated for corruption. It is outrageous to consider giving this very corrupt quasi-governmental agency more power. What are you thinking? The Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority needs to be abolished, not expanded. Vote no on Senate Bill 230, House Bill 311, Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority. So make sure you go out there and do that. We have got to send a very, very loud message to Tallahassee. We're tired of the corruption. And we're going to, guess what? We're going to get a grand jury. It is not appropriate. In fact, that's the common law grand jury. I think this is a perfect case for it, too. These people abuse their authority. They are taking public assets and entering into contracts that are inappropriate for the people. And they are harming us. It's not right. So make sure you go out there and do that. The other thing that I want to make sure I share with everyone is, let me get back into it. Okay. Now this I sent to the Florida, same idea, you send it to your representative and senator at the state level. Then you go out there and you look at the different committees that are involved and send the message to them. This is in reference to Senate Bill 172, House Bill 407, and this is in reference to notary publics. Right now, Florida notary publics can do whatever they feel like. It's a license to commit crime. It's a license to commit fraud. And what they're doing, they have absolutely no oversight, no control of these people. So I attached some information, and I attached three different things, and I'm going to read one of them, because as I've told you in the past, I've been the victim of notary fraud in the state of Florida, and that's how I learned all this stuff. When it happened to me, when a Florida notary, who is an officer of the state, a Florida notary notarized two documents with the forgery of my father's signature because he was in the hospital when they did this. So it's been proven that the documents are fraudulent. There is no question. That's what happened. This notary notarized these two documents, and she claims in her statement she only notarized one. Well, and one of these documents was a last will and testament, and one was a lease agreement. Which was also illegal for the situation. And then the last will and testament was recorded in Orange County. So I fought with the state to get them to do anything. They really didn't want to do anything. The Governor Rick Scott's executive office, EOG, Executive Office of the Governor, notary section, did not want to do anything. They don't want to be bothered. They just want these people out there buying up their stamps, because that's all it is. It's a revenue stream. I hate to think of how much money, you know, you'd have to do a little bit of math, go out there and qualify it. But there's to the tune of 400,000 notary publics in the state of Florida, and they all pay somewhere around $75 to get their notary stamp and become part of this process. And then they have to pay so much to be bonded. So it's a revenue stream for the state of Florida. This is the way government wants to make money, by selling notary stamps so that people can create fraudulent documents. And, I mean, just think about a fraudulent last will and testament. That's pretty serious. But the state of Florida really doesn't care. I mean, their attitude, you know, well, if it's really a big deal, then you'll go get a lawyer, and the lawyer will do what they're going to do or whatever else. They don't think they're responsible for what these notary publics do out there, until now. And so we have good news. They're working on it. And you need to make sure you contact the committees that are involved and your state senator and state representative and tell them to support House Bill 407 and Senate Bill 172. It's all to fix the problem with notaries. And on this one here, I'm going to read to you the letter, the executive order suspending this notary public. Her name is Rachel Harvey, DD 989-989-035. And remember, she was a public officer participating in fraudulent transactions. The state doesn't really care. That's the fact. I can prove it. I can prove by everything that's happened here, the state doesn't care. And here's a letter dated May 29th of 2013. Because this is all coming out of the officer of the governor, this is all public information. You can get a copy of it yourself. The letter to, and they send me a copy because I was the person complaining. They also sent a copy to Huckleberry Notary Bonding because they were the ones involved. Enclosed is a copy of Executive Order Number 13-133 issued by Governor Rick Scott on May 28, 2013. This executive order suspends your notary public commission pursuant to Section 117.01, parens 4, parens C, Florida statute. And then the message, in lieu of, now here they just said they suspended this notary public's commission pursuant. They don't really go into detail as to, they tell you what section it is, but they don't say it's because you failed to respond and do these kind of things. It doesn't say what, you know, the explanation of it. You'd have to read that section, and I don't have it open in front of me. In lieu of your suspension, this office is offering you the option of resigning from the Office of Notary Public pursuant to Section 117.01, parens 5, parens B, Florida statutes. So they just said, you know what, we know you did something wrong here, we don't really care. And instead of suspending you and putting you in a status of suspended, like we did it, you resign and act like it's no big deal. You go away on your own. This is the mentality. So this person, by resigning, as far as everything I've seen in the process, because they do know background check, anybody can be a notary in the state of Florida, this person can resign and then 2 days later go back out there and become a notary again. And I wouldn't be surprised if the person's done it. I haven't gone out there and checked, but I wouldn't be surprised because this is what the state of Florida promoted. But I wanted you to hear that. In lieu of your suspension, this office is offering you the option of resigning from the Office of Notary Public pursuant to Section 117.01, parens 5, parens 4, Florida statutes. Should you wish to resign, please execute the enclosed resignation letter and return it to me with your Certificate of Notary Public Commission within 15 days from the date of this letter. A self-addressed envelope is included. They're even giving them a self-addressed envelope. Upon receipt of your resignation, the executive order will be rescinded. They're going to say, we're not going to go and suspend you. We're going to say you walked away, which makes it look like you didn't do anything wrong. This is wrong. But this is what they're doing. Absolutely outrageous. And if you have any additional questions, please contact our office at, and I would encourage everybody here to write this down and call them, 850-717-9529. That's 850-717-9529 or via email, FL_GOV.notary@eog.myflorida.com. Go contact them and say this is not acceptable. When a notary has participated in fraudulent or reckless transactions, I believe it's fraudulent, I believe it's part of a conspiracy, but no matter what, she didn't respond to the inquiries like she was supposed to, and the signature of the notary was fraudulent because my father was in the hospital when it took place. So there is no question that the notary itself, the transaction was fraudulent. She was a participant in it. She refused to respond to the inquiries. responded once, but her inquiry didn't say anything, and I'll read that to you in just a minute. And they're letting her off the hook. And these are people creating, signing legal documents all across the state. Unacceptable. But this is what they do. And that's why these two bills are so important. And then in here, there is the attachment of, I was reading you the letter, State of Florida, Office of the Governor, Executive Order Number 13-133, whereas Rachel Harvey is presently serving as a noted Republican of the State of Florida, and whereas the Executive Office of the Governor received a complaint against Rachel Harvey for notary misconduct, and whereas the complaint alleges Rachel Harvey notarized a signature without the presence of the signator in violation of 117.107(9) Florida statutes, that Rachel Harvey failed to complete the notary executive notary certificate in violation of section, you know, and it goes on. I don't know if you want me to read this whole thing, but the bottom line is, now, therefore, I, Rick Scott, Governor of Florida, pursuant to section 117.01(4)(c), Florida statutes, issue the following executive order effective immediately. And then it says, Rachel Harvey is suspended from public office of notary public. Rachel Harvey is prohibited from performing any official act, duty, or function of public office, from receiving any pay or allowance, and being entitled to any of the emoluments, or privileges of public office during this period of suspension, which shall be from today until further executive order or otherwise provided by law. And so they just went and said, nah, don't worry about it, you're okay. Just resign and we're okay. Who cares? Just because you tried to steal or participated in a conspiracy to defraud the estate of a dead person is okay. Don't worry about it. It's okay. This is what the Office of the Governor said, May 29th, 2013. So, going back to the purpose, make sure you contact Tallahassee and say yes to House Bill 407, yes to Senate Bill 172. It's time to get the notary publics under control, make them accountable for what they're doing. It doesn't do everything, but right now, these notaries don't even have to keep a record of what they do. Nothing. They're not accountable for anything. And I know that because I went through it. And then I will read, I do this just for the fun of it, because it's so ridiculous that I have to read this. This is the sworn statement from this notary, and then it's also the cover letter of the notary section from the governor's office. The letter to Ms. Harvey encloses a copy of the, okay, wait a minute. Whoops, I got two things going on here. Let me close this one. Sorry about that. Let me open the right one here. This was dated February 5th of 2013, and this is the letter to me. Ms. Baptist, our office received a response from Ms. Rachel Harvey regarding the complaint you filed with our office. A copy of Ms. Harvey's response is enclosed for your review. If you wish to offer further comment or provide additional information before our office makes a final decision in this case, please reply in writing within 20 days. Should you have any other questions, please do not hesitate to contact our office, 850-717-9529, or florida.gov.notary@eog.myflorida.com. And let me tell you, call the number. When I was going through this, she was never answering the calls. But I didn't go away, and I kept sending emails, and then I started going to the Lieutenant Governor to try to get some kind of assistance. And at that time, it was Heather Slager, Notary Education Coordinator, Executive Office of the Governor, Notary Section. So, I mean, notice that title. Heather Slager, Notary Education Coordinator. That was the only person providing oversight for 400,000 notaries in the state of Florida. Nuts. Totally nuts. But as you can see, it's like, well, here you go, here's your response. If you like it, good. If you don't, whatever. I mean, they never truly read the response because nobody would accept this response. If you had a brain, you would not accept what this response was. Now, first off, the response is it's a standard form, sworn response of notary public, state of Florida, county of blank, date blank, so it wasn't even filled out correctly. And this is a person who's handling legal documents. It's just, okay, let me read this. This is the letter from Florida Notary Public, DD 989035, Rachel Harvey. I did notarize a document for Sherry Griffin on August 1st, 2012. This was the first thing I ever notarized, so I apologize if I did it wrong. I did not read the papers, but I believe I only notarized a lease. I was unaware of any extra documents required for a lease. This will does not look familiar to me at all. I came, I checked identification, witness signatures, and left. If I'm required to read the document fully and keep a copy, I was unaware. I am pretty sure I only notarized a lease, at least that day, but there were many copies. I really only got this notary to do weddings, and if I get to keep it, I will stick to weddings. This is a person signing legal documents, witnessing legal documents. And you have, and as what I sent to the committee, I gave them these samples of these documents. You can see significant differences in the signature pages of the last will and testament and the lease agreement. There is no way this notary notarized both these copies thinking it was the same thing. There isn't. She conspired to defraud my father's estate, and the state of Florida says that's okay. Just resign and go away. That's what the state of Florida has done. And people say there was a question, you know, I obviously was going after the other individuals involved. A conspiracy means more than one person. But they tried to say, well, wait a minute, you're blaming the other person. I said, no. I said, if you recall, on my very first inquiry to the state of Florida, I truly thought the other individuals counterfeited the notary stamp. I thought they had a document with this lady's stamp on it from something else, and they counterfeited it. All I had was a copy. I didn't have any originals. And so I thought that possibly they were counterfeiting this notary stamp. Well, then I found out that she was a friend of the daughter of the ones who pulled this off, the Griffins. And Sherry Griffin, she specifically mentioned Sherry Griffin in her letter here. And so she said, I did notarize a document for Sherry Griffin. Okay, so it turns out the notary was a friend of the daughter of Sherry Griffin. And the daughter's signatures are on the last will and testament. Her husband's signature is on the lease agreement. These are all being notarized by this one lady. It looks like it's a family affair. It's a conspiracy for the family to defraud my father's estate and to rip him off for some money. And so there is no way, no matter what you want to say, she was either grossly negligent or she was part of this conspiracy. Was there an imposter who was there signing for my father? She hasn't told me that. She said she's witnessed signatures. We know she didn't witness the signatures of my father because he was in the hospital. And then Sherry Griffin, the other person involved here, says that she paid Rachel Harvey to do this, to notarize a bunch of documents for her, and she did it. That's fraud. As an officer of the state, she should be held to a higher standard. But, I mean, I read this thing, and it's like it just unbelievable that this person is out there notarizing legal documents. And, by the way, just so you know, the technically the way the notary of this document did this wasn't exactly right either. So here you have another notary who witnessed Rachel Harvey's signature on this sworn statement, but the fact is that's not even 100% correct. They didn't fill out the form completely. So Florida notaries are not very, at least what I'm seeing. I know they're not held accountable for anything they do. I do know some that keep a journal and are very detailed. I know those are out there. But I also know there's robo-notaries out there where they just have the notary stamp stuck on the middle of the table, and whoever's there uses it and signs it. And no record keeping of what they're doing. And this is just totally wrong. So anyway, make sure you contact Tallahassee. Go out there and look up Senate Bill 172, House Bill 407. Make sure you contact your state senator, your state representative, and anybody on these committees who are reviewing these things. I find it, I mean, trying to send it to every representative, it might be a little bit difficult. You could do that. But send it to these committees who are the ones that are supposed to be reviewing this thing and challenging it and debating it and this kind of stuff. They should be aware of what's going on and know what your opinion is. So let's see here. And then on that same one, I gave them the other thing that people should be alarmed about, and I informed them of this. This fraudulent will was recorded in Orange County Court. It was recorded for safekeeping, recorded on January 9th of 2013. My father died in October of 2012. The Orange County Court does not know who filed that fraudulent document. Even though it's illegal to file a fraudulent document, Orange County government, Orange County Court, does not know and does not require any identification to file a last will and testament. Now, that, apparently that's not true across the state based on what other people have told me when they went to record such a document. But in Orange County, Florida, they don't care. It's okay. Go ahead and file a last will and testament with a fraudulent notary seal. Go ahead. Go for it. And then, had I not been persistent, had I not really known what was going on so that I could prove what happened on this case, these people could have stolen my father's property. They would have gotten away with it, except I was engaged and I knew what was happening. I knew he had been in the hospital, and I was able to prove he was in the hospital the day this transaction took place. But the notary has never been held accountable. The one lady, Sherry Griffin, is on a 3-year supervised probation. She entered a plea of no contest. And then she covered for her husband, saying her husband didn't know anything about it. And, you know, part of me would say, I don't truly think the husband was the instigator, but I don't think he didn't know anything about it either. He might be a little bit slow, but I don't think he's stupid. But they dropped the charges against the husband because while they didn't think he was innocent, they didn't think they could prove the case because the wife, Sherry Griffin, took the blame, saying she did everything. And that's when she was the one who made the statement. She paid Rachel Harvey to notarize those documents. And that's where the real question comes in. Okay, let's get some more questions about here. After receiving this first response from Rachel Harvey, which was totally unacceptable, for the Office of Notary Section to accept that as any kind of response was a joke and a farce on their part. But I challenged it, and I sent back a detailed letter with very specific questions. The notary refused to answer. Kind of like the IRS. Now, obviously, the money we're talking about and the level here is much more limited to a matter of a few victims versus massive. But when you don't answer the question, when you plead the fifth, what's the reason why you're pleading the fifth? And see, she was an officer of the state of Florida. She didn't have that right. She refused to answer, but they said, oh, just go ahead and resign. It's okay. Well, you're a crook. You're a fraud. You participated in a fraudulent regardless of anything else. I shouldn't use the word crook. I don't know how much she got paid for this stuff. She was either negligent or part of the conspiracy to defraud. And I believe there is a very strong case for conspiracy, especially when she refused to answer the detailed questions. Not rocket science, if you ask me. But anyway, so please go out there and make sure you contact your state and state representative and state senator and the committees involved in Senate Bill 172, House Bill 407. I gave them all sorts of good information to see how fraudulent this stuff was and that the notary was never held accountable for her reckless actions. Because every one of you out there, I mean, obviously this impacts people who live in Florida much more than the visitors, But visitors get things notarized while they're here, too. So, those were like two of the biggies out there today. Definitely have to shut down this nonsense. Regionalism is what the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority, this is part of a regionalism mentality, the taking over of the state owning all the property. It all, you know, ties back into the Agenda 21 routine, just like Common Core does, what they're trying to do to destroy this whole country. And they're giving this to an agency, a quasi-government agency, with the exception of the Orange County mayor, which in this case is Teresa Jacobs, which she isn't one to be trusted either. She is on this automatically on this board. But everybody else out there is appointed by the governor. There is no elected representation there. They are involved in corruption all the time. A grand jury came back with them and said it is a culture of corruption. That's the way it is. Yet, the state of Florida wants to empower them to do more of this. No. No to more corruption. Period. I'm start saying period after everything all the time. Okay, well, tonight I need to actually cut the show a little bit late, or a little bit short, excuse me. Gosh, I can't talk today because I have some work I have to take care of. And I'm going to drop off just a few minutes early. But I will leave on one of my favorite things, the American's Creed. I'm going to leave on this note. And definitely, everything we were talking about with the common law, grand jury earlier, we have got to take back this country. It's not going to be taken back, but, you cannot leave those in power today. You cannot trust them to do the right thing. Part of it is their own brainwashing and indoctrination, the dumbing down of Americans, who have been convinced that once you're in public office, you are an elitist, you are some kind of royalty, nobility, and you are above the peasants. No, you work for the peasants. you are the servant. You are the public servant to us. They don't seem to get that part. And they don't understand the American's Creed. So it is up to us to take back what is ours, to not allow the reckless, tyrannical government to continue. It's up to us to take it over. And here we go. The American's Creed. I'm going to go ahead and share this with you, as I have shared it many times, and this is what I believe we all should believe, and we should all follow. I believe in the United States of America as a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, whose just powers are derived from the consent of the governed, a democracy in a republic, a sovereign nation of many sovereign states. That was so critical to what we were talking about tonight with the common law grand jury. A sovereign nation of many sovereign states, a perfect union, one and inseparable, established upon those principles of freedom, equality, justice, and humanity for which American patriots sacrificed their lives and fortunes. Illegals are not American patriots. They're invaders. I therefore believe it is my duty to my country to love it, to support its constitution, to obey its laws, to respect its flag, and to defend it against all enemies. This was written by William Tyler Page, 1917, and it was adopted or accepted by the United States House of Representatives on April 3rd of 1918. And on that note, I'm going to say goodnight. And please tune in next week. Monday we will be talking about the situation where the kids out west were told they were not allowed to wear an American T-shirt, that the Mexicans with Cinco de Mayo was more important. We had to respect the Mexicans in America with Cinco de Mayo, which killed Americans, over the rights of Americans to wear an American flag. Wear a T-shirt with an American flag, a patriotic shirt. Something's very sick about it. Talk about, remember the Alamo, the Battle of Goliad, and everything to do with how that all led up to the American-Mexican War, where much of the Southwest would not be there if it had not been for that war, and why today we have people, groups like La Raza, who believe that they still own Southwest and are here trying to take back the Southwest. That is what is really happening in our country today. Anyway, tune in Monday. We're going to have a good history lesson on that. And when we talk about illegal immigration, talk about national security, the invasion, and who owns the Southwest, these are things you need to know. Okay, on that note, please be united. Please come together as Americans. We are Americans. If you're not an American, you need to go home. If you're not an American and you're here visiting, fine, then you go home. We must be united as Americans, and it really doesn't matter what color your skin, what language you speak, whatever, wherever you came from. If you're an American, you're an American. An American means you embrace that Constitution, you speak the language of the land, and you believe in the individual rights, which means you don't believe in Common Core communism. So be Americans. United we will stand. Divided we will fall. If we seek the truth, if we face the truth, we will save America. Good night, everyone.